Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Mini Crush Monday. Back with the OG crew, Noel in front of me, Ramsey to my left.
I'm liking this being in front of you business.
I don't like it.
No?
I'm glad you do.
Should we switch back?
Huh? Well, then what do we do with Ramsey?
Well, he can just sit here. You can look at him.
But then Ramsey's across from me.
Are you just anti people being across from you?
No, I've been across from Josh for 12 years.
Well, that leave a bad taste in your mouth? Is that the issue?
No, it's a great taste.
Okay. It's what's it taste like?
Crunchberry.
I love crunchberries.
So, Noel and Ramsey, happy mini crush-iversary. I was just, we were all alerted this morning that February 3rd was our very first mini crush.
Really?
And that is the date of today. Oh, I'm sorry. She said February 3rd. Today's the 5th.
It's the 5th.
Oh, good Lord.
Close enough.
Can't we do anything right around here?
We do things right-ish.
Well, why did that thing come today then, 2 days late?
What thing?
We got a thing in our company.
Oh, really?
Project management system that said happy anniversary.
Okay.
February 3rd.
Well, you know, that's their screw up, Chuck, not ours.
It is.
You know?
Well, happy mini crush anniversary 2 days ago.
You know, it's in the zone here somewhere. We're in the region of the anniversary.
So, Noel, you cut your beard almost all the way off. What gives?
It was kind of a barber accident, really.
You let them do it?
I did let them do it.
That always scares me.
They usually just tidy it up a little bit, and I just said, let's take it in a little bit more this time.
And they took that to mean the face?
Yeah, he used a guard, and I just didn't stop him. I saw what was going on, and it was too late.
I've been in that position where I'm like, I'm getting a bad haircut right now, and I'm too afraid to speak
up. Wait, it's not a bad... Come on, Chuck. It's just like a...
I was talking about bad haircuts, okay. Not your bad beard.
It's a fresh start. It grows fast. I'm a fast hair grower, so it'll be in a week's time, you won't even know the difference.
All right. It's different. It's weird to see you so freshly shorn.
Well, you know, it's weird for me too, Chuck.
All right.
Do your kids, are they afraid of you guys shaving your beards off?
We've never talked about it. Ruby would freak if I came home with like a completely bare face.
I don't know.
Yeah, same here.
It happened to me when my kid was like maybe 4 or something. I shaved it all off except for a mustache on a lark.
Well, that's creepy, so.
Well, she didn't know. I guess it's just inherently, it's naturally creepy.
Yeah, stranger danger.
Kids just get it, that mustache equals stranger danger. But she cried and freaked out, and she remembers that to this day. She's 11 now, and she totally has a very palpable memory of that moment.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember my dad, he was had a beard all of my life, basically, starting at about... When did he grow that beard? I don't think he had one when I was really little, so maybe 6 or 7, but had a beard and still does from then on, and he shaved it one time, and it was just the oddest thing. And when I see pictures of him from pre-me, it's just weird. Someone has a beard for like 40 years,
right?
You know?
And for you, Chuck, I mean, you wouldn't recognize yourself probably. You'd freak out looking at yourself if you shaved it all the way off.
I shaved it all the way off a few years ago.
Oh.
And then it was like, my God, what have I done?
Right.
Grow.
It's like that David Byrne line. My God, what have I done?
And you may say to yourself, this is not a big, fat, white face.
Don't ever shave that beard again.
Yeah, the beard is comes in very handy.
Agreed. What I realized most instantly is that it obscures the double chin.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
So, Noel, I just finished listening to your John Cameron Mitchell takeover. Thank you for covering for me.
Of course.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
It was a wonderful conversation. He is, I don't get professionally jealous much, but that was one trip that I was so upset to not be able to go on.
I was bummed that you couldn't
make it. Because a fun hang, and like to hang with a hero of mine. And when I heard the show, I was like, oh man, he's such a good conversationalist.
He's great.
So whip smart and like... Just on it, man. He had his shit together.
I agree. And I, you know, like I said, we've hung out probably 5 or 6 times at this point, and I would consider us kind of borderline friends. I mean, sure. we text and stuff, and there's business involved, but
yeah,
we really
professional pals.
Very much
thing.
You know, elevated beyond that. And in Athens, we stayed in this Airbnb, and he went to breakfast with us the next morning with his whole crew, and he's friends with all these Athens people from the Elephant Six Collector,
right,
which
sure.
is, you know, people that I know as well and have
what
revered
a great, great
for
experience.
A long time. And then Peter Buck was around.
That's
and,
crazy. That's what killed me.
Randomly.
I saw just, that picture of him photobombing in the background.
That was just at a signing. They did a signing at Wuckstree, and then he played with them both nights. The first night when it wasn't John, that was on Saturday, it was this band Eyelids opening for Camper Van Beethoven.
Which kills me because Camper was one of my early bands. Daisy opened up, which was one of my Athens bands.
That's right. That's right. And then the next night, Eyelids became John's backing band.
Right.
And Peter joined them as well because he produced this EP they made for with of Lou Reed covers was to benefit John's mother who has Alzheimer's for her care. So
that's
he
really
played
sweet.
Both nights, and then he just ended up randomly. There's a bar any Athens folks would be familiar with called the Manhattan.
I know that's
which
one
is just
of my
an old
towny
bar,
too.
And everyone kind of went, and Peter was just there. Just,
were people just, coming up to him and stuff like?
No,
oh my God,
it was
Peter
all people
Buckets
that already
Athens.
Knew it. It was all like Chill. The people that already were like used to it. That's the kind of bar that it is, where it's like.
Sure.
People don't
was.
Mess with anybody there because every. But it was all these local Athens luminaries there, like Andy LeMaster, who's an incredible producer and engineer, and he was in a band called Now It's Overhead and played with Bright Eyes for a while.
Oh, sure, I remember them.
And he was there, and I knew him from back in the day, and all the Elephant Six guys and stuff. But and this guy Todd, who
Amazing.
Runs Lo Yo-Yo Stuff, which is a really great record store. He's the kind of quintessential like record store guy who like will kind of like you know haggle with you over the price of like a rare LP if you deserve it. Or not, kind of one of those guys, you know.
Yeah.
But he was there. It was just a lot of fun. My
Man.
Friend Frank came, and he's a huge REM fan, and was really nervous about talking to Peter. But Peter dropped this wad of cash out of his sock, and accidentally, and Frank saw it, picked it up, and handed it to Peter. And then he was in, and he was just part of the conversation.
He
and
keeps
Peter,
cash in his sock.
Uh huh.
What is he, an old lady?
I don't know. He definitely wears sunglasses indoors and a big old like rock
At
star
night,
scarf.
Sunglasses? Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that's a power move.
Yep. Yep, he's awesome.
You can get away with that.
He was a sweet guy, though. He was just kind of a nerd, a little awkward, didn't get out very much, he kept saying.
And I know his
was
brother.
Just,
I'm friends with his brother,
okay.
So I would have had a, for sure.
And yeah, exactly. He'd
been like me and Ken are buddies.
Uh-huh. Nicest guy I could have hoped
Goodness
for.
Me. Well, I hated missing out on that. For sure. Did he play Hedwig stuff this night?
Oh, they closed with Midnight Radio, and it made me hit about, I lost my shit.
Good God.
And they also did the song Low by R.E.M.
Yeah,
a real cool, creepy cover.
Low.
Yeah. And they did, all the Lou Reed stuff they did was kind of deep cut stuff off a record called The Blue Mask, which is kind of one of his gothier records.
Yeah.
Just fantastic. Everything about it. They did Moon Age Daydream by Bowie, him and Jay Gonzalez from the Drive-By Truckers. And that's a thing that his character in the show Shrill, which I only just now started watching, which is trippy because now I know the guy. Now I'm seeing him play this total asshole in the show.
He's such a jerk.
He does the song in the show. There's a musical episode where
he sings
Moon Age Daydream.
I'm like halfway through season two.
It's just a great show.
Yeah,
it's so easy to watch, too. What a good show.
I'm trying to get her on the show.
Oh, absolutely.
She's fantastic. I'm sort of know her husband a little bit, so I should just – or go through John Cameron Mitchell.
You absolutely could.
Got to use these hookups, man.
Mm-hmm.
Leverage.
What's her name?
A.D. Bryant.
I don't know her outside of the show. I guess she's an SNL alum.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And she's just – she's still
wonderful.
On SNL.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I love it. Love it show, which is one of my stream this, so we'll just touch lightly on that later.
Great.
So, Noel, I got some backlighting and Ramsey backlighting on the TV finally. The
Hughes?
I got the Philips Hue strips.
Mm-hmm. Those are great.
Yeah, and Emily just cracks up because, you know, I always set the mood and set the colors, and she's just like, you're such a fucking nerd.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
I have
the whole Hue package in my living room and bedroom. I don't have the backlight, but I did have like one of the little orbs, and you could just put it behind the TV and have it facing the wall.
Sure.
But you've got the real,
the
strips. I want to get those.
Yeah, that's all I have is the strips.
Okay.
But I like it. It's cool, and I generally leave it on sort of like a kind of low, dim, golden hue for most everything, but I watched Frozen again with my daughter, and I put on this ice blue, which that palette is all over that movie.
But doesn't it do predictive stuff, though, where it can, like, tell
I think
kind
you can
of?
Do that, and it will change color, but I don't know if I'm into that.
I heard it seemed a little creepy to me. Yeah,
and maybe distracting.
Mm-hmm.
But she's gotten on the Frozen thing late, and hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's constant in our home.
Really?
No.
What about Frozen 2? Did you guys go see Frozen 2?
I didn't. Emily took her to see that, and she said it was really good.
Yeah.
So I will be seeing that soon when it comes out a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But that soundtrack, man, we got her a little boombox so she could have some autonomy over music. Got her some CDs. So she's been carrying this thing around playing Frozen constantly. And point one, it's really stuck in my head and annoying. But point two, those are really good fucking songs.
Dude, it's the folks who did Avenue Q, and
it's good stuff.
It's just Broadway and caliber, like is. Really sticky melodies, really great.
And a range like from super poppy, kind of modern sounding things that kids enjoy to like that Fixer Upper song is like Jesus Christ Superstar.
Exactly.
It sounds like 70s sort of rock opera.
Or there's the one that the snowman character sings that's almost like a vaudeville tap dance kind of number.
That's
you
my
know?
Least favorite. The but Josh Gad song.
But it's still, it's cute. He gets to ham it up a little bit. You
yeah,
know? It's
yeah,
more
yeah.
of an old school Broadway kind of song.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. I think I'm forming a theory that the biggest of those animated films have the best music, and
mm-hmm.
that's no accident.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think kids know.
Yeah, Moana had fantastic music as well.
Yeah, it was good, but not as good as Frozen, I think.
I think you're right, but I do think there were some songs in there that were pretty fantastic. Like the main one, Where I'll Go or whatever, and then there's the one with...
Well, the one Jermaine Clement
Jermaine Clements, where he does kind of the Bowie voice, you know?
Yeah, it sounded
so
like,
good.
This is Bowie
shiny.
To Bowie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, shiny, that's it. So good. Ramsey, is your daughter into that stuff, or is she too old for that?
She went through a slight phase of Frozen. I think she had issues with the movie as far as like the violence in it, like that. She's kind of anti like all that. Which
yeah,
is,
man, I love it.
Yeah, and she kind of took. I think she dressed up once as is it Elsa?
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Because she had that fairy princess moment and stuff like that. But not as much. It sounds like as your kid, but yeah.
Yeah, Ruby has dressed up as Elsa once every day.
Famously portrayed by Adele Dazeem.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That. I remember that. Who's that?
It's John Travolta.
Travolta, that's right.
It's just like he made it up. He just pulled it out of nothingness. The wickedly funny Adele Dazeem. Her name is Idina Menzel.
Yeah.
It's like he just had like a
I wonder how many people named
brain
their cat
fugue.
Adele Dazeem after
I
that.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, you know, she hasn't been in the Big Princess thing until this Frozen, and she's got the outfit and she wears it a lot.
Soon you'll be going to Ren Fairs and all that type of stuff.
No,
and...
I don't think so.
Put the kibosh on that.
All right, so we decided to start out this week because yesterday when I posted this was the birthday of two actresses that I love, Miss Laura Linney and Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh.
JJL, as we call her in our house.
Sure.
Yesterday was both of their birthdays. So, like we did with the Zonster, I thought let's pay tribute and just find out what everyone's favorite movie is from each of these
love it.
Wonderful, wonderful actors. What are yours? You guys think on that if you need. But
yeah, I need just a half. I need a beat.
I'm gonna go ahead and throw. I mean, I love Laura Linney a lot in everything, but You Can Count on Me has a very special place in my heart. It's one of my favorite films, and the acting and the nature of the relationship between her and Mark Ruffalo as brother and sister touch me. And it's probably my favorite movie of hers.
Interesting. I don't know that one at all.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, it's hard not to go with The Anniversary Party. Great, great movie. She was awesome in it. I keep wanting to see a sequel to that movie. I think that would be an interesting thing to sequel, like a little small independent film. I want to know where those characters are today. And then Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know, it is a teen, quote-unquote teen sex comedy, but more from that era. But she's really good in that as a young girl kind of finding her way through the beginnings of sexual awakening. And it was good. I think it was a very real portrayal.
For sure.
She was fantastic.
That was a little bit darker than the rest of the 80s.
Oh, yeah. It had something else going on.
In the rewatch, it actually holds up, whereas some of the other
ones are
not there.
Yeah, it wasn't a silly movie. You know, it was Cameron Crowe.
Sure.
And, I think, was it Amy Schekerling?
Heckerling.
Heckerling.
Right. Heckerling. You're close. Good no, you're Lord. Close.
I think it was Amy Heckerling, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who did Clueless, right?
Or was it Penelope Spheeris? Who was it? It was one of those two.
It was definitely not Spheeris, I don't think, because she did like Wayne's World and all that
stuff.
It
does hold up, though. Still one of my
favorites. No, it's a movie. Again, so many of those 80s things are just very dated and have like all of these fingerprints of like, you know, really pandering to like the times and trying to be like every other, you know, kind of formulaic genre movie. And this one really is its own thing. It almost feels more like a 70s movie than an 80s movie, you know, to me.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the quality of the filmmaker.
The portrayal of the 80s isn't hammy and ham-fisted. It's just sort of kind of like it was.
I agree.
It was Amy Heckerling.
Amy Heckerling, that's right. So we're going to start off with Mike Sams here because he's firsties. Laura Linney, Primal Fear. That was a great movie. Remember that one?
She the lawyer?
I think so.
Yeah.
That was a good one with the twist with Ed Norton.
Yeah, no spoilers.
I think it was his first film, in fact.
It was definitely what pushed him out into the spotlight because that was a real standout role. Richard Gere.
For JJL, he says Dolores Claiborne. That's a movie I just saw for the first time last year, believe it or not.
That's for Jennifer Jason Leigh, right?
Yeah, Emily was like, you never saw Dolores Claiborne? I was like, no, I know all about it, but for some reason it just got by me. It was a hole, though.
Does it have to do with a well? Did someone get pushed into a well? Did I make that up? Or am I thinking of Lassie?
Okay. No spoilers.
Hudsucker Proxy, man.
Yeah.
That's the one that just popped into my brain because that's an acting role right there.
Trent Moore says. He says Hudsucker Proxy for sure.
She chews that scenery and spits it out, man. It's wonderful.
Yeah, because it's all that snappy.
Hey, buddy. You know, it's fantastic. I love it.
That's so good. Brandy McDonald says, I only have one for Laura Linney, The Life of David Gale. I didn't see that one.
Mm-mm, neither.
Did you see it?
No.
A lot of people are saying Ozark, even though it's a TV show. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, she's great in that.
Here we go. Lisa Lyles says Rush for Jennifer Jason Leigh. I forgot about that movie. That was good.
Yeah.
Jason Patrick.
And it had Tears in Heaven on the soundtrack.
Oh, really?
I remember that because I had the sound. I used to be a member of the Columbia House Tape Club.
Oh, of course.
And they sent me the Rush soundtrack, and it had Tears in Heaven on it.
Laura Linney, Tales of the City. That is what Lisa Lyles says. Old Buddy Paulson agrees about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And he goes with Truman Show. Yeah. And he said, humble brag, he said, I got to read the script for Truman Show a few years before it came out, and I stopped writing because it was so good.
Now,
and he said, then I worked with Andrew, and he was a jerk. So I started writing again.
Okay. To me, Laura Linney kind of blends into the background a little bit for me. I'm trying to remember a standout role of hers, and I can for Jennifer, but I can't quite for Laura. But she was in Congo as Dr. Karen Ross.
Oh, God.
The 1995
shame on you, Noel.
Mega Monkey classic.
You bring up the only stain on her resume.
Gorillas. They were gorillas.
Oh, excuse me.
What did you say?
I said monkey.
Oh.
They make that distinction very clear in the film.
I'm sure.
The guy who calls them a monkey gets his brain smashed very quickly.
Didn't they have Tim Curry in that?
Yeah, Tim Curry doing this inexplicable accent that's like unplaceable.
Oh, really?
It's this kind of weird, like pseudo-European accent that changes. And it's a really fun movie. They did a How Did This Get Made about it. Highly recommend it just for the yucks.
All right. Kat Giambruno says Anniversary Party, very underrated, and Love Actually, overrated movie, but she killed it, Laura Linney, in that film, she says. Don Lozano agrees about the Anniversary Party. She said, but her best role is probably Hateful Eight. She was so great.
She was fantastic. Really good.
Talk about a just disgusting human being.
Oh, I love it.
And like to get to dig into that as an actor. It's like, just be as vile as you can possibly be.
She was probably the best part of that movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think.
That movie I had a lot of problems with.
I know you did, and a lot of people did, but it definitely, like, there were some performances that were
there
pretty
standout.
There
were parts standout. That were really great, mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. I thought it was funny every time someone came in the door, they had to nail it shut again. That recurring bit was really funny.
Remember that scene where, I forget who it was, smashes that guitar that she's playing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know the whole story about how like it was on loan from the Martin Museum and actually a priceless Martin relic?
They were supposed to
switch it out for the smash, but Tarantino just let it roll, and then he just like, fuck it, I'll just like pay him for it. But it was like, literally, like they're never going to loan out another guitar ever again after that, I think. That was the story I read. Yeah.
Don Lozano for Laura Linney says The Savages. That was a really good movie, too.
She was in The Squid and the Whale, too, I just remember. That was a great, great role.
No one said that yet. Interesting. Michael Reed says Hudsucker Proxy and Mystic River. from Laura Linney. That was a pretty good movie, mm-hmm. if I remember. And someone does say Congo. Brad Carr says Truman Show or Congo, and then JJL, Hateful Eight. Boy, people, she's getting a lot of love for that one. Primal Fear from Caitlin Hennessy, and Nothing for JJL. That's okay. Let me see here. Elizabeth McSwain, Laura Linney. I really enjoyed her in The Truman Show and The Nanny Diaries. I didn't see that. And then Dolores Claiborne, hands down, she says.
Yeah, I have. I'm mixing up Dolores Claiborne with something else in my brain, I think. I don't know if
Claiborne,
I
think it was a Stephen King
joint. It was,
and
for
it
sure.
It was Kathy Bates, mm-hmm. and there was a, well, like I said, that one's best to
I remember the video box. I just don't know if I've actually seen it or not. Like, anyway.
Well, if this was Noah's Holes, then I would say no.
That would be a big no.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Jennifer Jason Leigh in The Possessor. It's David Cronenberg's son.
You had me at Cronenberg. Wow. Yeah. Oh, son. Wait a minute.
It's his son.
Okay.
Premiered at Sundance.
Oh,
and freaking blew people's minds.
Oh, great.
She was in Existence.
Yeah.
She sure was.
Right, very fucked up, weird Cronenberg film.
I didn't know Cronenberg's son was doing stuff. That's exciting.
Yeah, he's just as fucked up as David. Right. So.
What if he came out and made, like, rom-coms and stuff? My name's Danny Cronenberg. Yeah. I love a meet cute. Jennifer Mudge. Oh, Mudge, you're breaking my heart.
Only his meet cutes involve actual sentient meat.
Yeah. I mean, cute slabs of meat.
Exactly.
Jennifer Mudge says, for Jennifer, it's hard not to, it's got to be Fast Times. And for Laura Linney, it would be any movie with her not in it. Whoa. Am I reading that right? Is that a big
insult? Is that a diss?
I think so.
Just read it again.
She said, for Laura Linney, it would be any movie with her not in it. Yeah. Hmm. I'm trying to twist that into saying she should be in every movie, but I don't think that's what she's saying.
Here's my thing is I do find her to be somewhat forgettable.
Oh, God.
And that's only – this is just me. It's just I'm literally trying to remember a standout role. Like, I remember she was in Congo. I remember she was in The Squid and the Whale. But I don't really remember what she did in it.
If you say Congo again, I'm going to ask you to leave.
Congo. Okay, so I said it differently. I think that's harsh. She's obviously a very good team player, but I don't think of her as being a standout most of the time, whereas Jennifer Jason Leigh really differentiates herself and has these different performance types. You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay. All right, we'll just stop that because I'm angry now.
No! Dude, Possessor looks awesome. One of the goriest horror movies ever, it says.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll check that out.
Hell yeah.
I still like to see a good gore fest every now and then just for S&Gs.
Yeah, like, even the look at the still from it. It's upsetting, just the still.
That's upsetting. You know, I'm crushing out The Sixth Sense after this with Maddie.
Oh, cool.
Got to watch that again last night for the first time.
Did it hold up?
Since the theater.
Yeah.
It does not
no,
to me.
No, I did not think it did. I thought it might not have.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting episode because I didn't love it. Well, this will have come out. That will have come out this Friday.
Just previous.
Right before this. So.
Do you think he's going to come in being an apologist or
a big fan? Maybe he's enthusiastic.
He is enthusiastic. He also does not – he's not fond of trashing anything.
No. That's why he's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
So we're going to move on, and I pose this question. Has there ever been a movie where you thought the sequel outdid the original? Pretty basic. You guys have any that come to mind? Godfather 2 is a very famous example of a sequel that at least equaled the original, which is tough because I think that's on a level of all-time great.
The John Wick movies get better each movie.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
And this is not for a movie, but for series, I think The Leftovers, each subsequent series, is more involved and more interesting than the previous. I think Better Call Saul is maybe a little better than Breaking Bad.
Right.
I just finished it. But again, these are not quite the question. But for movies, it's harder. I don't know. I think the John Wick holds true.
All right. Rams, you got any?
Just the obviously, like, Empire, I thought was better than the first. Evil Dead 2, but like I consider that a remake because there's a lot of the same plots over and over and again.
They lean into the comedic aspect. The first one was almost accidentally funny, and then the second one, they're like, ah, fuck it. This was obviously more of a comedy than it was a horror.
Yeah, I didn't find the first one funny at all, but accidentally or otherwise. But yeah, I think it's a remake-ish. Adjacent. In the neighborhood of. Sarah Kostreba Yak. Welcome to the show, Sarah. Says Superman 2. I feel that the introduction of Zod and his team are iconic. Yeah, Superman 2. Maybe better than Superman 1.
Is that the quest for peace?
No, I think that was
Superman 4.
4, yeah.
2 was just 2.
2 was great, yeah. That was with Terrence Stamp and Zod and...
Right, that one is good.
The three baddies that come to Earth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then 3 is when they really start going weird and downhill, right?
Yeah, I think neither 3 nor 4 were great. But the first 2 were good.
Sure.
I remember seeing that first one, man, in the theater. Memorial Drive, Stonemont Theater, right next to Eddie's Trick Shop. Nick Faulkner says Empire Strikes Back and Dark Knight.
That's a good point.
Like Dark Knight Rises, yeah.
That's a good point.
I guess those are sequels for sure.
Yeah, Batman, was the first one called?
Is it Batman Begins?
No, yeah. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That's what it was called.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I thought the whole thing with Ra's al Ghul was a little half-baked in it, you know, with what's-his-face. And the second one just felt a lot more fully formed and a little more thought out. I would agree with that.
For sure. What do you think of the Batman coming up? Ramsey's just shaking his head and smirking.
No?
Well, no. I think it's going to be better than the last Batman movie we got, which Justice League.
I didn't even bother.
Oh, jeez.
I kind of forgot. I was thinking Christopher Nolan. I forgot about Ben Affleck's foray.
He never got his own Batman movie, though. We never even gave him a chance.
All,
right, know? Exactly.
It was very forgettable.
He was more about the shape of his head, kind of. He was the burlier Batman. He had like a big round head. It was weird looking.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys ever saw the video of him, like someone was saying, like in an interview with him and the guy that played Superman was like, he basically was like, yeah, the reviews aren't that good. And Ben Affleck's face just looks like, what the hell did I get myself into?
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And, like, he's just really depressed and everything. But, I don't know, they had CGI'd the guy's mustache out for Superman, which is weird. Like, come on, guys. Like, it's for scheduling and stuff. It's just, but anyway, yeah, I am looking forward to the new Batman movie. It's just, my expectations are pretty low.
Who's directing it? I know it's Pattinson, and that's cool because I think he's gotten to such a point where I just don't know if he'd pick something that was stupid because he's been making such good choices. I don't think he's done anything dumb. Everything he's done has been weird and off the beaten path and a little bit challenging. So I wonder if he read the script and was like, this is cool. I could do this Batman in an interesting way.
I think the Batman is Matt Reeves.
What did he do?
If I'm not mistaken, Matt Reeves did, I think his first movie was Cloverfield.
Yeah, this is the Cloverfield,
Let Me In, the remake of Let the Right One In.
Which was good, which was just fine.
He did those two Planet of the Apes movies.
Which were also just fine.
No, he's good.
Yeah.
He's a quality director.
I mean, the cast in it is pretty exciting. We get Robert Pattinson, Colin Farrell, Andy Serkis.
Oh, I love Andy Serkis. Now, you don't
Paul
feel
Dano,
like, you know, I know we all had a little bit of mixed feelings about Joker, but I do appreciate that a movie like Joker has maybe set the tone for, like, now we can kind of go off book a little bit for some of these superhero origin stories,
sure.
Like get a little weird and gritty with it, you
yeah.
know, more so even than the Nolan stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Dan R. Evans says Terminator 2. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Mm.
That was better than the Terminator.
1,000%, yeah.
And I thought the Terminator was great. So,
Terminator 2 holds up upon reviewing much more so than the Terminator does.
Yeah. I mean, Terminator is a little dated for sure. MD Charnley says Sam Raimi with a double whammy, Spider-Man 2 and Evil Dead 2. Yeah, Spider-Man 2 was better.
Yep.
That was the gem of that.
I agree.
Triquel. Mm-hmm. Triquel? Trifecta?
Trilogy?
Sure. There's just a regular word for that. Mm-hmm. Carl Söderberg says Godfather 2. Ben McVitie says Paddington 2.
Yes.
I haven't seen any of those.
Oh, Chuck, you must. Watch it with your child.
Really?
I mean, almost now, because they're so delightful and there's really nothing. There's some jokes in there for adults, but it's nothing like offensive or weird. It's a heartwarming, lovely, funny, delightful movie.
Is the first one any good?
Yeah, it's great. But right. 2 somehow managed. It's got all of these people from like weird British comedy in it, from the Mighty Boosh and other kind of weird, like off the beaten path British comedies. It's got Brendan Gleeson is in it, and
he plays
this kind of like hardened prison cook, who ends up having his heart touched by Paddington. It's just wonderful.
I got to check that out. Yeah. Thomas Tenorello says Aliens, far more entertaining movie and more character development.
That's going to be a divisive one.
Yeah, man. I mean, I liked Aliens, but I like Alien better.
Mm-hmm. It does more with less. Alien, yeah, just, feel yeah, like they got Alien some budget.
And, well, he changed it. It was like Alien was more of a horror movie. Aliens was more of a sci-fi action movie.
That's
yeah,
true. Yeah, so. That's true. They had the big mechs and shit. Again, fun movie, but just totally different flavor.
Yeah, you know? Agreed. Wendy White says Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Bringing back a villain from the OG series was a fantastic idea. And the whole storyline of Kirk dealing with his age. And then topping it off with the death of Spock. What's not to love? John Wick 2 from Bobby Feldman. Toy Story 3 from Bruce Conwell. Those are all great.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to pick. Ian Swanner says Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I think it's better in every way than the first one. We get better character development and action. All the music factors into the story, plot, and character development as well.
I did quite like that one.
Did you guys see Babe, Pig in the City?
No. I saw the first one.
I'm going to say that was better than the first one.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, it's really dark. George Miller actually directed that one instead of just
That's
producing.
Right.
And so there's like a lot of homages to Mad Max and that type of stuff. And
then, in the Babe movie, there's homages to Mad Max?
Oh, yeah. They recreate the Terradome, the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
It has Mickey Rooney in it and all this other stuff. And like
wow.
You got all these animals, self-realization of if they're human or if they're an animal. You know, there's like an orangutan that won't go outside until he puts his clothes on. I mean, yeah. There's just like a lot of weird, dark stuff happening.
Check that out.
I am going to
It's completely different. And supposedly there's a cutout there where George Miller screened it, and parents were like, there's no way we're showing this to our kids. And they had to cut like 20 minutes out of
Interesting.
It.
Interesting. And then he went on to do the tap dancing penguin movie, Happy Feet.
Was that Miller too?
He did that one too. What a weird career arc that guy had.
Hello.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do a few more here. Brian Fullinger says Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. Okay. Old pal Jeff Noel says, obvious ones, Godfather 2 and T2. Stories are better, character development, and world building. Additionally, T2 brought us a nice refinement of some effects that were introduced in The Abyss. That's true.
That's very true.
That was the very same effect, actually.
That liquid metal thing.
Yeah.
That now does look pretty dated.
Oh, I think it still holds up okay in T2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that looks all right.
It's just that no one uses that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so it just it has a flavor of that time, I think, is the issue.
Did you guys see the latest Terminator that was out this year?
No.
The true sequel?
Did you?
I did not.
It was on the plane.
Pretty good.
I'll check it out on my next flight, maybe.
You should see that on a bigger screen.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think you should watch action movies on
Yeah, that's probably
Asian
true.
Screens.
That's a good point.
Before Sunset, incredible sequel. That's Paul Wilder.
That's right. And then he did a third one, right?
Yeah, before Sunrise,
I think. People weight all those pretty equally. They just think that's a pretty masterful trilogy.
Yeah, and hopefully they're going to just keep doing those. That's my hope.
Yeah.
Because, boy, do I love those films.
I haven't seen a single one of them. Got a three-way hole there.
They're great. God damn. That's so gross.
What?
I just threw up in my mouth.
No, you didn't.
A lot of T2 and Aliens, man. It is all over. We'll finish up here with Hannah Scarapa says, How to Train Your Dragon 2. The audience had grown up since the first one, and the writers allowed for darker subject matter to be tackled.
Interesting.
And the tech had progressed nicely over the 4 years as well. Awesome. Good stuff, everyone. Good sequels. And we are going to finish up with a little stream this. Think about what you guys have been watching.
Sure.
If you want to chime in. Like I said, the aforementioned Shrill season 2 is great so far. So much heart, great writing, great acting. It's just really good stuff. And it's got a very interesting subplot from season 1 that is now carried over into season 2 with her troll.
Yeah, I'm just troll. Now to the part where they're like trying to find the troll.
Yeah, it's they're keeping it going in season 2 in a creative and interesting way. Or at least for now. He may not be around too long. I'm watching The Outsider.
I am too.
Love the first two episodes. The second, the third and fourth fell a little more flat for me. And I'm kind of like, come on, like I need something to happen here. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. Not bailing on it yet. But it I'm not did either. Not deliver on the first couple of episodes promise for me.
Yeah, Ramsey recommended it in one of our last episodes, and that's what got me checking it out. And I really enjoyed the first episode. I watched it starting a little too late at night. I get a little sleepy sometimes, and I may have dozed near the end. But I really like the setup.
Full on sleeping.
I said what I said, Chuck.
Yeah.
I enjoy the setup, though. I like them. No spoilers, but there's a nice supernatural twist, but you're not quite sure if it is, and you have to question. You know, people's motives and stuff. It's got a True Detective-y kind of vibe, like Ramsey was saying. So I'm gonna give it a go.
Ramsey, are you still on it?
I am watching it, but it is falling flat for me.
Those
first two episodes I thought got me, and I was like, oh, this is gonna be great.
Yeah.
And then
maybe it'll pick back up.
Yeah, because they're just like walking around and trying to figure shit out, and you know, there really hasn't been much action or things happening.
Yeah, I think like. For a show like that, there needs to be one kind of big moment in revelation or something we learn. And I feel like episodes 3 and 4 haven't really had that.
No.
It feels like it's plodding along a little bit. But I'm not going to bail on it yet. I'm still into it. I think I miss Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, man, this is great. I love Jason Bateman.
But after the first episode, you're like, whoa.
But, I mean, obviously he's going to come back at some point. Again, if you haven't seen this, you might not want to hear this stuff. But
yeah,
there is a thing that's making the rounds on the A24 social media or Instagram account. It's a special Q&A the Softy Brothers shot to go along with screenings of Uncut Gems. Mm-hmm. Now that it's gotten like more buzz and stuff, and it's like you know Mel's Diner in LA.
Sure,
it's like famous, I guess.
And, oh, I think I saw that,
and it looks really cool. It's like they've got hidden cameras in this diner, and they're meeting Adam Sandler, but they kind of trick him into doing it where it's sort of like a candid camera thing,
right?
And then different folks come by and ask questions. And Jason Bateman shows up as one of their special guests, and I really want to see it. I guess you can only see it by going and seeing the movie in the theater again. But I think it's neat that they put their touches on all these things. Yeah.
I wonder if Bateman lives here full time now, because they shot The Outsider in Atlanta as well.
Mm-hmm.
Ozark, 2 seasons have been here. Surely he's wised up and bought a house, right?
I would think he's probably got, you know, so comparatively real estate cheap.
Yeah, chump change.
I mean. You're a big
well, it's
movie
not chump
star.
Change. Atlanta's fairly expensive.
No, it is, but compared to LA,
obviously not like LA. Yeah. He could throw down on a house. Jason Bateman, where's your house? Where do you live? I'm gonna knock on your door with some microphones.
Send us your deets.
Man, I want to get him in here. He's just so goddamn busy.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I managed to get in touch with people, I'm sure he'd be like, oh, sure. I got plenty of time to just drop by.
For sure. You guys, I'm sorry. I'm not to derail, but I'm reading more into this this new Son of Cronenberg movie, and it just looks incredible. It's also
Son of Cronenberg.
It's also got Andrea Riseborough in it, who is my Mandy. She's my Mandy. You know how much I love Mandy. And
yeah.
It looks like that kind of movie, like a really, you know, psychotically existential nightmare kind of thing. I'm really, really into this.
All right.
Thanks for the tip, Rams.
And then the final thing I've been watching, guys, is this cheerleading documentary, Cheer.
I've heard it's incredible.
Have you heard of this, Ramsey?
Yeah. Carrie watched it.
It's great.
Yeah?
Dude, we have no interest in cheerleading, Emily or myself. It could be a behind the scenes of a Broadway show, musical cast, or a dance troupe. It could be, hell, it could be a documentary about a football team. It's about an intense group of people and athletes coming together to work hard, and he's got these great, rich storylines, beautiful photography. It's awesome in every way. So I highly recommend it. Don't think, oh, God, this cheerleading thing. If you like a well-told, rich story, then you're going to like it.
I think it was Kai Rizdahl who does the money show on NPR. He was talking about the business of cheerleading, and it was a story about how there's literally like a monopoly around cheerleading supplies and stuff.
He
mentioned that show offhandedly and was just like, if you haven't seen it, where have you been? You know,
it's really
it's
good.
The best. It's really
very
worth
compelling.
Your time. Yeah.
I mean, I would liken it to the same as like people that didn't like basketball would get something out of watching Hoop Dreams. You know, these are human stories about the human condition.
Totally.
At the end of the day. All right. Well, that's all I got, guys. You got anything else?
I watched the first episode of McMillions.
Oh, yeah. I just added that to my my old queue.
Yeah. It's not bad. I'm there for it.
How many episodes is that?
like to say around 6, maybe.
Okay.
This is about the hoax.
McDonald's Monopoly.
Yeah. And I remember that because I do remember that being one like you'd win occasionally. You'd win a couple bucks or a free fry.
Oh, sure.
It was a thing where like it was fun to play because you would kind of get return on your investment. But I guess the deal was what? That I don't fully understand. I don't want to spoil it, but like somebody just staged the whole thing or there really was no real prize money.
Basically, like, there was, like, a sticky note on some guy's desk in the FBI, and some guy picked it up as, like, Monopoly fraud, mm-hmm. McDonald's, and he picked it up as, like, what is this? And he started looking into it, and then supposedly, like, within the first 5 minutes, you know, is, like, only people who have won it are from the same family. And then it talks about the odds. Then the FBI brings in McDonald's, and McDonald's has no clue how this happened.
Wow.
And so it's, like, that's basically the whole setup for the whole thing in the first episode, which... I mean, it's pretty intense and stuff like that. And,
cool.
You know, obviously there's like a podcast that goes with that.
Same.
Can't wait.
Yeah. And I also saw Color Out of Space.
Which, oh, is that good?
You saw it?
Yeah, I did see it.
Okay, that's right up my alley.
I actually enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. As far as Nick Cage on the Cage-O-Meter, he definitely is 10 out of 10.
Oh, really?
So he goes,
had me at Cage-O-Meter.
He goes full Cage quite a few times.
Yeah.
But if you don't like Nick Cage, I don't know if it's for you.
Probably.
But it was still enjoyable, without him.
I can't remember the guy's name, but it's directed by that dude who kind of tanked his career when he did The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh,
that really,
oh,
wow. The yeah, one where
Brando and
Brando kind of loses his mind, and mm-hmm. he's got an earpiece where he's getting lines fed, and he wears this white face makeup and like a t-shirt over his head, and it's for no reason. There's a documentary about it, the whole like shit show that is that movie. But this guy came back, and apparently he's doing quite competent schlock, which I'm into.
Interesting.
Visually amazing and all that stuff, and all the acting outside of Cage was great as well.
Noel, if you don't start a band called Competent Schlock.
I do like that. It could be a krautrock type band, like a can.
Yeah, maybe. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and we will be in your ear holes once again next Monday.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.